So, welcome to this second edition of a series of specials on touring the US of A, and Hackerspace is in there. This is GMC, and with me is Kyle.
Hi.
Hey, Kyle.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's getting a bit chilly because we've left LA far behind us, actually. We're sitting somewhere in Utah,
yeah.
I believe. And enjoying a spectacular view of mountains, and
we're getting higher up in elevation. It's 5,800 feet here,
which is in European measures about 3,000 meters. Let's keep it at that. People can look it up at home. So LA, I quite enjoyed that actually. Weather was lovely. That's a plus. And we went to see some great hackerspaces. We started out in 23B shop, which is really a machine shop. They do really hardcore metal and bending and welding. And
yeah.
So you felt right at home there, probably.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's a small space, a tight-knit group of guys. They've got all manner of machines and equipment you would use for various types of fabrication. They had different types of welding equipment there. And also some electronics equipment, cool microscope for soldering. And it was just real homey. They were very hospitable and let us stay there as sort of a home base. And so we had a loft, and we were able to move around from there. And it's quite a nice part of town. It's in Fullerton, so it's not actually in the city of Los Angeles. After chatting with them for a little bit, we made our way out to Null Space, which was really cool. That evening was great. I don't know.
It was, yeah. We just went up there, not expecting much or anything, but we got up there. It's a building, just on the skirts of the city center, I think.
In a garment district,
The fashion, fashion area.
Yeah.
And it was all the building, but it was quite all right. We climbed the stairs and knocked on the door, and what we found there, it was a full-fledged electronics lab, equipped to do all kinds of things. They had lots of microscopes, equipment to do SMD, surface mount electronics. They had a CNC mill there, which they used to produce PCBs, just cutting out the copper. And we got to make something there as well, right?
They had a small POV LED display.
The NSL Cylon project. It's
correct.
They designed it for their Eagle class, which is PCB designing software.
Yeah, and they did it for free, and they let everybody build these, so they had a couple extra, and they got us right to it, soldering, and it's really cool, because the benches are all arranged in rows. It feels kind of like a classroom. They had several projectors, and then sort of a couch area. They had a small shop in the back, and then they also had a section over in another corner where they're doing some gene sequencing and biohacking stuff.
That was funny. Yeah,
and you know what they even did? They fixed my Hope badge.
Because you had the Hope badge, and there were some components on there. It's all SMD mounted, and you had a problem with one of the chips.
And they're FTDI, experts.
And
experts.
They just said, give me the badge, and sure, we'll replace it. They had the components on stock. And
So we were just sitting there working on our POV things and fixing badges and having good conversation. Mm. It just felt really good. It was just a couple guys, and we just chatted and enjoyed it. I don't know. It was really a good group. It felt
I got a good vibe there. Yeah
and
there
me
was,
too.
They were just willing to teach us how to do this SMD, because of course we messed up completely. We misaligned the chips, and I don't
know.
And but they helped us fix it, and we got some nice blinky LEDs LEDs there, which also has a nice Atmel chip in there, so we can reprogram it and all. That's that was great.
Yeah.
Now, so we left there again, and the next day, after some leisure at the beach, we went to we went to the Mexican restaurant where we got face fucked with nachos and salsa.
Yes. And how many more salsas do you want?
Oh my god!
They just kept bringing salsa and huge bowls of chips, and then finally we got some food and we couldn't eat it because we'd had so much so much chips.
I was full of nachos. I don't want to eat nachos for the rest of this trip.
But at any rate, we got together with a group of them, guys from 23B.
Yeah, they do this every Tuesday, I guess, they go out to dinner at the Mexican place.
Kind of connect. And well, that was election night, so there were a lot of results coming in, and we actually got to see a little bit. They had a lot of TVs in this sports bar, of course. And well, we didn't have a TV be gone, but we changed the channel, and we were able to watch some of the election results. And
so the Californian bill to legalize marijuana didn't make it.
It did not pass.
57% against or something.
Unfortunately,
which is a surprise, because right when we got into California, it started already. The smells of people smoking weed drifted into the car. And
yeah, I think in California we smelled weed everywhere we went.
Everywhere, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
it's worse than Amsterdam.
Yeah, it's worse than Amsterdam. I remember in San Francisco, we were walking down the street, we were behind people smoking a lot of weed.
Yeah,
we actually went. Yeah, it went down into the subway and felt, you know, that was fresh air. But at any rate, after dinner with the 23B guys, we went over
We went back to LA again. It was right near the Sony Pictures Studio.
Culver
actually,
City,
the former MGM city.
Yeah, the oldest motion picture house in the Los Angeles proper, Los Angeles area proper. And, well, we visited with those guys for a little bit.
Crash Base.
Yeah, Crash Base. They're doing some nice interesting
space.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they have it's like a cross between Null Space and 23B shop, actually. They have some CNC stuff there, some nice mills.
A mid-sized mill and a pretty good-sized bench lathe.
And, well, the guy was doing, he was mixing up a fresh batch of rocket fuel.
Yeah, he was working with aluminum shavings and paraffin wax, making a sort of solid rocket fuel.
Yeah,
and that was one of the things he was doing for fun. And he we got the tour. They have several working MakerBots as well.
Yeah,
and they explained some of the projects that they're doing, how they got started. You know, they're involved in a couple competitions and demonstrations for various events.
The Hackerspace Challenge, Xion Hackerspace Challenge, which Mitch Altman is presenting that. Just basically five hackerspaces were selected and they get a 2K budget. Actually, we're going over to a hackerspace later that also participated in this challenge. So I hope to talk with them about this and about the whole challenge and what they've been doing. But so that was Crashbase. That was nice. What else did we do in LA? Well, after that, I think we went out into the desert, right?
Correct.
Stayed at this beautiful cabin that Arclight offered to us.
Yes.
That was quite an experience, actually.
I enjoyed it. I'd never camped out in a trailer. It was solar powered too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a very small town near Palm Springs. It's actually a
29 Palms.
29 Palms is the name of the city. And that was a little different, you know. It's near a military base. It's sort of just out there in really hot desert. And well, we made good fun of it, and
I enjoyed my time there.
Yeah.
The bedroom was cheesy.
Yeah, it was a bit weird. Yeah,
the tiger print floor and
and
the sheets and
But you know, it had its own flair. You know,
it has.
A little wild character out there.
I liked it out there.
Yeah.
It was right near Joshua Park. We went there briefly.
Yes, during one evening we saw sunset at Joshua Tree and. Well, it was sort of a break from, you know, going in and out and visiting all of these new people at hackerspaces, but I think we recouped and
we
got right back on the road.
It's one of the loneliest highways of the city, of the country.
Yeah, we did. We saw some salt mines.
White plains. And some of the very long trains that are being used here. I mean, you don't see a lot of passenger trains here, right?
No.
Freight transport on rail is quite big, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. We get busy with the freight cars out here in the U.S., and it's very interesting. It brings me back. It makes me think of an older time. You just see this vast desert land and a huge, long train just floating by in the middle of the land. It feels very old, you know, and it's there's nothing around it, yet this mechanical thing just going right through the middle of a desert plain. It's fascinating to watch.
Beautiful, yeah.
They were timed. We stopped
at the roadside with a crossing. There was a small, dry riverbed.
Yeah.
Presumably in winter it rains sometimes there. We didn't see any evidence of that except the dry riverbed. But then the train came right by, so I stood there watching that for a while. It was a really long train. It was great to see all this heavy metal just thundering through the desert on its way to some destination somewhere.
And there was a lot of them. They were timed very specifically.
Yeah.
It just seemed very busy for an otherwise very vacant and quiet part of the country.
At some point, they were parked there, like whole trains of a kilometer or something long. And just parked there waiting for some engine to pick them up and bring them wherever. Well, that was nice. We took the highway, it went into Nevada, Las Vegas. When we got there, the first thing, of course, I wanted to do was see the Pinball Hall of Fame. So we went there and, we had a look around. I actually met the guy who runs this place, who started it, Tim Arnold, and I had a brief chat with him. So let's listen to that.
Okay.
I'm in Las Vegas at the Pinball Hall of Fame. I'm talking with Tim Arnold. And so you started this Pinball Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, me and a bunch of other guys, we're a not-for-profit pinball collectors club. Wow. So nobody here gets paid. We just hang out and fix pinballs, and the public comes in, puts coins in the games. There's no swipe cards. There's no pay one price admission. We're the last real arcade in America where you put coins in.
Yeah, real quarters.
And when whatever's left over at the end of the month after we pay unavoidable expenses like a power bill and insurance and stuff like that, we either use to pay off the building, which we now own, or we give to local charities. We haven't been doing much charity work lately because we've been so busy paying for the $1.5 million building we're in.
Wow. Well, it must be difficult. I mean, that's why you don't see many of the pinball games, right? It's not making a lot of money, so how do you even manage to...
We do it just by not paying for anything. We don't pay for labor. Everybody's a volunteer. We don't pay taxes. We don't pay permits. If we were trying to make money at this, we'd have to pay $70 per game per year for permits. That's $28,000 for a full room every year.
That's a lot of money.
We don't pay sales tax on any of our purchases. We get reduced rates from parts suppliers, and we don't pay property taxes on the building. So we're able to do it just by running it very lean. We don't, have ever more than one person here.
Right.
So it's just, a labor of love by me and other people.
And a lot of love. You have a lot of games here.
I have about 250 games here. I have about another 800 in storage.
Wow.
So at some point I want to get the rest of them going, but it's just a time thing.
Yeah. Well, I know that. I'm a volunteer at the Dutch Pinball Association myself.
Yeah.
We also have a couple of games, about 80 that are working. The rest is just in storage. And
right.
It takes time to restore them. You probably have a lot of work already with maintaining these.
Yeah, we're doing quite a bit of business every week.
Yeah.
That, the light bulbs go out and things get dirty and flippers get weak. I could be like every other operator in the world and just let my equipment slide and take a vacation, but that's, once you start to do that, then people, come and don't stop coming in. They say, I don't like that place anymore because those games are all busted and junky. So we're trying to avoid that. I mean, it's not a very fancy place. It's just a big dark room. There's no carpet, there's no chandeliers, there's no beer and wine, there's no pizza. It's just simply the best games we can make in a big dark room.
And it is. It's a couple of... And you have of old generations, like the Root Rails and the really old ones in the 40s. And
yeah.
Also the newest ones from Stern.
Yeah.
I think you've got all of them.
Well, we try to support Stern by buying one of every new game that comes out.
Yeah.
See, if nobody buys the new games, then Stern is going to go out of business, and then there's going to be no parts because all the subcontractors will quit making parts, and then it's all over. I mean, right now I can call up and order pinball rubber rings or springs or legs or, any generic part because they're still being made.
Yeah.
But if Stern goes out, it's over. So. Yeah, we're trying to support them.
Oh, that's great. The games are all well maintained as well. I mean, you can see it's a work of love because
yeah.
Well, I've I must say that there are more pinball games here out in America I've seen. I've been doing a trip from, well, we started in Seattle, then the West Coast, and now in Nevada, right. Then we'll go up and do the East Coast. I've seen more pinball games here than I see in my own country. And some of them are actually quite well maintained still. That's also great to see.
Yeah, well, it's, again, if it was an economic thing, it wouldn't be here because pinball takes a lot of labor, a lot of very skilled labor. You just can't hire a kid, give him a rag and a can of WD-40 and say, go to it. You got to have somebody that knows what they're doing. And most operators, people that put games out, they just want video games or video pokers, something simple where all they have to do is show up, wipe the screen, and take the money out. And no, they don't want to bother with light bulbs and flipper coils and circuit board repairs and whether the game is level, you know, they just don't care.
It's dying out also, the art of maintaining pinball games thing. I mean, is it also something that you do here, train young people to work on these games?
I haven't found anybody that's shown an interest yet.
Really?
That, and I'm kind of overwhelmed just keeping up with what I've got, that I haven't really contemplated, you know, teaching a new generation. I could teach somebody the basics in a week. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's just changing light bulbs and cleaning.
Well, I mean, restoring an old EM game, that takes some more...
Yeah, but a lot of what we do isn't restoration. A lot of what we do is just routine maintenance. 90% of it is cleaning and changing light bulbs. And if the ball doesn't bounce, that means the rubber's dead. Take it off, put a new rubber on.
Yeah. Well, that is quite simple, eh?
But see, again, we're hamstrung by the fact that I can't pay people.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get volunteer labor is worth about what you pay it. So
it is.
But yeah,
but
if you're wrong.
How many volunteers are there?
Me and about 6 or 8 other guys.
Okay.
We're open 82 hours a week. I'm probably here 40, 50, 60 of those hours myself.
Wow.
I open and close every day. That way there's never any question of giving the keys to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And the volunteers drift in and out. You know, they'll come in and say, hey, you want a break? And I'll go, yeah, I got to go do something, run an errand, and they'll watch it while I go do that. I have, you know, a specific day off where I don't have to be here at all.
Yeah, okay.
And, yeah, but it's what I want to do. You know, it's what I've always dreamed of. We're at 225 games now. Eventually, we'll be at about 400 as we get the place filled up. I'm going to add in a lot more older stuff. I want to have more 50s and 60s games.
All right.
Even though they don't make any money, it's, you know, really fascinating to see them and play them. And I think we have enough of the new stuff that we don't really need any more of that.
Yeah, well, you've got quite some peculiar games as well, like the Orbiter,
which
is more a modern one. That's a strange game. I never saw one in for real, but I've heard stories about it.
Yeah, they only made 800. Very low production game.
Okay.
When it first came out, we bought one new. I was operating back then, and it never made any money at all because you couldn't win free games. But now that, you know, we're in a nostalgia setting, and people aren't desperate to win free games. I mean, when you're a kid and you're playing pinball, you got 6 quarters, you want to play something you can win on.
Yeah.
So now it doesn't matter. You know, tourists come in with $20 to throw at something, and they'll say, I got to play this one, it's so neat. Yeah, so Orbiter's neat. We got the Pinball Circus. There's only 2 of those in the whole world. We got some other low-production weird games. And we try to hit all the highlights, you know, the best games of each era. We got a lot of the 60s Gottliebs that everybody fondly remembers. And got the 70s Bally games like Wizard and Fireball and Captain Fantastic. And we got the 80s and 90s Williams games that everybody remembers.
My favorite, The Getaway, is also here. That's, It's a very nice place, and I'm going to play some games. Tim, thank you for talking to me.
Well, if you're ever in Dutchland, there, take off your shoes, your wooden shoes, and hop on an airplane and come to Vegas.
Oh, definitely, it's worth a visit. Thanks.
Yep.
So, the Pinball Hall of Fame. It's a great place. I got to play one of the unique pieces in there, the pinball circuit. Even you liked it.
I did.
You're not a big fan of pinball, I get the impression. And,
I wanted you to have fun and enjoy it. I am not a big pinball player, but I did realize that, wow, a lot of these games are different. There's a lot of unique attributes to each one. It's not all the same thing. But this one that was one of only two in the world was interesting because it was very very much like an arcade game that's tall instead of these flat table pinballs.
Yeah, it wasn't really deep. It went up and there were all these ramps and rails that took the ball higher and higher. And then at the top was a little play field where you got to play a little game and get extra rewards. It was a fun game, and it's a pity that there's not more of these. It's one of the last innovations. Well, I showed you the other one, the Pinball 2000, with the screen and the Martians, and that's a really funny game. But it's a pity that we didn't get to see where all these new things would lead, because, well, pinball, it basically collapsed. It didn't make any commercial sense anymore, and they're only making slot machines now.
Yeah. Well, there's one more company you said.
So we also went into downtown Las Vegas a bit, which you really hated. I got the impression. I just wanted to see it. I mean,
yeah, I've been avoiding Las Vegas like the plague. I don't really get it. I don't acknowledge it. I don't want to participate in it. It wasn't as bad as I thought, and you know, it wasn't sucking me in as I thought it would, and it doesn't feel authentic to me. That's my problem with it. And of course, you know, I guess it's fun and it's celebration, but I, as a hacker, I kind of think like, how does this work, and what's involved, what's behind all of this, and it just makes me, it gives me sort of a sore feeling, you know, because I know what's behind it, you know, whatever that is, security wise or money, you know, investment wise. It to me, it just seems like a losing thing. I don't buy into it, and but yeah, it's part of the American experience, and you pointed out it's definitely something. It's a part of America. It's something.
Yeah, we are shown as people go there to have a good time and forget about everything and waste their mortgage and that stuff we see on television. So I really wanted to see that, but we then went into the area around. It was not too far from the center, actually.
Yes.
We went to Sin Shop, which is basically one of the youngest hacker spaces we've seen so far. They just, I think, I emailed them about 1 or 2 months ago. I said, hey, I want to visit you guys. I found them on the hackerspaces.org. I want to visit you guys. And they emailed back, oh, well, that's nice. We're not that far advanced yet. We're just starting. And I think it gave them an impulse also to start working on the space again. Because what I got it, they've been meeting for a while, talking about projects and fun stuff. But there wasn't really a hackerspace in Vegas.
Yeah,
but when we got there, it was, the garage was full of equipment, and we got a tour of the house itself. There were three people living there. The whole house was a hackerspace, I think.
Yeah.
It was.
These guys, they're very plugged into the scene and that kind of thing. They know where they want to go. They've got all kinds of different things, different equipment. They have a Mandel.
One of the American bots.
Yep, and they're also rebuilding a PDP 11, which I thought was awesome. I love the history, and to see them bringing this, doing some retro computing was really amazing. And we got to play with that, and that was really fun. These
big disc platters.
And
they made it turn it on.
Yeah,
it was
like a jet taking off. It was really an event too, because it takes time, and you're like, "Wow, it's not even loading yet," you know.
And that's just a disk drive we turned on.
It's so much fun, and they really have the right spirit, I think.
Absolutely.
And you know, we brought this up that it's interesting. We hear this in other spaces that our city's great, but people don't talk as much as they should, and that's really what they attributed the lack of a space like this. And they really, it felt like they were hacking that. They really wanted to dispel that and start something fresh to keep people talking, keep people engaged. And we talked to them a lot about building community and that kind of thing.
And I think they're going to be on the right path. Definitely. And because, you know, with a place like Vegas, they have this huge commercial event known as DEF CON. And to be quite blunt, it's sort of shame on them for not creating something sooner.
Yeah.
And I think these are the guys that are going to be able to do it. So. Oh,
definitely. The vibe felt perfectly right. And I felt at home there. And they had some boxes of random stuff. We dived into that.
We ended up
some obscure machine, which turned out to be a very advanced logic analyzer for debugging mainframes. And
6802030 processors.
Brilliant. We just hooked it up. But that's the spirit you need in the hackerspace, the curiosity, and then going in there and just trying out stuff. And there was this blind guy who came by.
He was inspiring.
He had a lot of... Well, despite being blind, he tried all kinds of things. Well, obviously soldering is a bit of a problem if you're blind. You might put the... But he had all kinds of ideas for hacking devices together that can help blind people and visually impaired people.
I think that's amazing.
Because he had some vision left. He could see some, vague areas of lightness and darkness, so he thought about enhancing that, just making some sort of display system in his goggles that would translate camera images and project them on the displays in such a way that it made sense to him, that he could get more information than he could without. And he had all kinds of ideas also for making measurement apparatus like multimeters and oscilloscopes that you can use if you can't see, because that's a problem. So
three-dimensional feedback and I learned about this word haptic technologies and sensory feedback, and we were talking a lot about that kind of thing, devices that give you feedback so that he can design in spatial environments but without the visual element, which is very inspiring. Somebody that's wanting to design ideas, things that are in his head, and get it out of his head in something that people can see, like CAD and three-dimensional stuff. But to do that without being able to see, I think, is brilliant and very inspiring. And I think this is something that sighted people could get behind and start working on. You know, just close your eyes and imagine trying to build something. I mean, that's a challenge. And I think this community is definitely up for a challenge like that. So that pardon the pun, opened my eyes to a whole realm of hacking that I think is burgeoning, you know, just like with the biohacking and other things.
Yep.
We'll see. Yeah, that's really cool.
That's pretty exciting. I think this space will kick off. They're almost open for public. They have the access control mechanism there, which is something not a lot of hackerspaces have accomplished. We said this last time.
We see this is the one that everybody's doing, but nobody's
RFID cards. Yeah. It's just, it works. You can bleep and go in, and that's nice. If you're in Vegas or the area, there's not much around Vegas. If you're in Vegas, definitely check these guys out. Cinchop, you can find them on hackerspaces.org. I enjoyed Vegas. I liked it a lot. The temperature was nice. It's getting chillier now. We're up in the mountains. We're going up to Utah, Salt Lake City. And I'm curious what we will find there. Let's continue our travels upwards.
Sounds good.
I think there was three different corner blitzes where I saw Corby Easton coming off the weak side and almost getting to the quarterback on two of those occasions and finally getting to that quarterback in the fourth quarter. I love that aggressive behavior, the aggressive play calling. Those are the two things that stick out most in my mind. Defense did a great job.
Wow.
But offensively, 55 points. They were able to run the ball efficiently as well, but it's all about the passing game when you want to put up points.
What's the use, Mr. Jorgensen?
3 days, like my patient Hal calls me up. He's very conscientious of his health, works out, he's got a gym in his basement, but he wasn't getting this type of nutrition regularly. He couldn't believe how much better he felt after 3 days of taking the certified organic Super Reds. People notice it quick, other people it might take 3 or 4 weeks. Just keep plugging at it. It's not about if you're going to feel better, you are going to feel better.
Let's talk about the really big news here, this stamp, this seal, if you would, that's on the container, the canister, certified organic by the USDA. This is...
...but are not able to get him down, and he breaks away and picks up some good yardage. So the initial tackler of Snow having some problems there. Jordan Afo and Bill Vival come in on that front line. La Mattia in there at defensive end, along with Avalisi Lapuaho in the gun on first and 10.
better world. I love to bicycle and hike and sing in my church choir, and I'm a communist.
Hi. Some of you know me as Nitro Red on YouTube. I like to make YouTube videos. I like to race cars. Pretty much like dealing with people. And I am a communist.
Hola, soy Sigis Fredo. Vivo en Chicago, un puertorriqueño que trabaja en la comunidad, en la cultura y asuntos que afectan a la comunidad, y soy comunista.
Hi, my name is Daniel Elash. I'm a historian and a retail clerk, and I am a communist.
There you go. I'm a communist and proud of it. You know, I've been to Europe a lot of times, and it always drove me absolutely bonkers. Always drove me crazy going there, because you'd always see, you know, the hammer and the sickle flying everywhere, and they have an active communist party here. And I said one of the best things about the Obama administration is the fact that these communists, they're not afraid. I mean, people are telling you exactly who they are. I mean, Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC yesterday, I'm a socialist. They're telling you exactly who they are. But communism, people that will come out and say it, it bothers me. I'm going to tell you why. Would it bother you if you saw somebody going around saying, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm a Nazi"? Yeah, for some reason, that's not, you know, that's taboo here in our society. Oh, the Aryans and the Nazis and all this stuff. And rightfully so. Same thing with the Ku Klux Klan. But it's not a taboo anymore to be a communist? Really? Let's go to the scoreboard here. Communism kills. 65 million in China. 20 million.
We're in the Transistor down in Provo. I'm sitting here with John and Mike and a bunch of other guys. So I wanted to talk. You participated in Take on the Machine, right?
Yes.
It's sponsored by Zion, and you got basically $3,000 worth of budget to work on the project. Can you tell a bit more what the challenge was?
The challenge stated that we had to take a commercial product and repurpose it somehow. We also had to make it fun or useful for the average person, and it had to include a movie reference. And we definitely opted for the fun side of things. Our project was actually a laser zombie tag defense game in which zombies on remote-controlled cars would drive at you, and you had to shoot them with laser guns before they overtook your position and you lost the game.
That definitely sounds like fun. And you had... how long did it take? How much time did they give you?
They gave us 3 weeks to finish it. In the first week, we were still arguing about what project to do and how to accomplish it. And then we ordered parts. And then for 2 weeks straight, we were just down here whenever we had free time trying to build everything and get it running.
Wow. So you build a big play field. I saw it back there in the storage room. It's also on the video.
12 feet by 16 feet.
Okay.
Plywood squares with a bunch of
buildings. On the movie Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yes, yeah. Shaun of the Dead. You're actually inside the Winchester Tavern, and the zombies are trying to get in.
These are these little remote-controlled vehicles that you put an Arduino on there, I believe?
That's correct. It was an Arduino. We actually used one of our minimalist Arduino kits and printed boards here at the Transistor. We call them Gordwinos, because Gordon, one of our members, designed the board.
Oh, that's nice.
And we used those in all the guns and on all of the zombie cars.
Okay. And you used lasers, or was it...
Yes, there was a laser. It would send out a pulsed, basically a message saying this is gun number one or this is gun number two, so that the zombie would know which gun has hit it. And it communicated back to a central zombie brain computer server using XB radio chips.
Okay, that's nice. So there's a lot of different disciplines there. You've got some carpeting, you've got some soldering, you've got some, even some decorating and making the zombies out of Barbie dolls, I believe, that were horribly cut up.
That was a fun trip to the local used goods store when a bunch of grown men bought a shopping cart full of naked Barbies.
Some of us were horrified.
Now, what was the greatest challenge, you think, in the whole project?
I think the time limit was really the hardest part. Just getting it all functional in 3 weeks was a challenge for us.
Yeah.
There were a lot of times we stayed up pretty late working on this
project. You got a
project.
Tower of aluminum cans remembering the occasion.
It's a remembrance. But because you would do this in the evenings, I imagine.
Yeah,
it's,
we all, well, most of us work full-time jobs in addition to coming down here to work on the project. So it was a bunch of time juggling.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you guys already know how to do all this stuff? Or did you invent new things? Did you learn new things?
We learned a bit, I guess. It was broken down into several sections. I know I'd never actually used red light sensors before, so I learned how those work in order to get the laser sensor triggers to work.
I'd done a little bit of you know, some autonomous vehicle stuff before, but I never actually done some of the low-level stuff, like interfacing with a compass chip and some of that stuff.
Okay.
Before.
What was the biggest challenge? What did you guys learn about each other working as a team? What was the hardest thing?
Hardest thing?
Like technical challenge or interpersonal relation challenge? Both. Either or. I don't know, because it was a new thing. Like, you know, you guys
when we're all
more
in here, what? We work a full-time job and then we come down here for another 8 to 10 hours. You kind of get tired of each other over the course of 3 weeks, so was a bit grating.
I don't know. I don't think anyone got that bad. It's not like anybody like storming out or anything like that.
No, no, no one was really upset.
It was mostly playful.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
We're just irritable. Yeah, because we're all in the same boat, so we're all tired and irritable, and our electronics aren't working.
We're a bunch of old men.
Grumpy old. The verdict is still out, right?
We don't know who's won.
There have been 5 hackerspaces that participated in the challenge. We just watched some of the videos. There were a couple of funny projects in there.
Right.
I think yours definitely went high up on the fun factor. So
Hopefully.
And it all worked.
They're not looking for something useful.
it was definitely a fun project. I'm really glad that we were part of it.
Yeah. And I believe this was also the first time you did something together in the space with all of the of the members. Or?
Most of the time, we just work on our individual products or projects and ask for feedback back and forth. And it's a more knowledge-based community here than physical projects together. We're working on a MAME cabinet now as another hackerspace group project. That's multiple arcade machine emulator, for those unfamiliar with
every
the
term. Every hackerspace should have one. That's, So you just got that working. And you're working on your access control system, I saw. With a keypad.
No, that works perfectly.
Cut the wires, don't run anywhere up there. It's a sort of recurring theme with the hackerspace, is that they're all working on the access control system. But do you have any regular nights that you are here? Or?
Yeah, we're here open every Saturday night, is our public Arduino night, we call it, where we encourage anybody who happens to be in the area to come down, share their projects, have a good time. It's not very formal. We just all get together and hang out and talk about stuff.
Well, cool. Thanks for talking to us. And have a lot of more fun in your space.
Yeah.
And thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks
happy
for coming
to have
to visit.
You.
Yeah.
It's always good to see fellow hackers.
Thanks. Yeah. One of the things that, of course, is very important in the United States is democracy. It's one of your largest export products, I think. And so to get the real full American experience, you took me to partake in the democratic process.
Yeah. We went to a hearing.
Yes.
And
in
testified.
In Denver, actually.
Yes, it was in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, you've been following this story for a while. What was this all about?
Quest Telecommunications Company is engaging in merger relations with a company from Louisiana called CenturyLink. CenturyLink is much smaller, and Quest is responsible for more than 10 states on the West Coast, and they're a very, very large company. I'm a subscriber, and they're a part of the old AT&T telephone system. And this merger is Well, it's a big deal, and not a lot of people are talking about it.
So, yeah, we went there. Apparently, before we got there, the lawyers already had a meeting. I think we'll hear more about that later. Let's just listen to the opening of the session by the chairman.
This proceeding is being webcast. I've just turned it on. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to public hearings in docket 10A350T. I'm Commission Chairman Ron Binns, and I'm the designated hearing commissioner for the Quest CenturyLink merger. This commission has asserted jurisdiction over this merger, and none of the parties have argued otherwise, and so we're having a hearing to decide whether we agree with the merger or not, and whether we accept or not conditions on the merger. You're here to give public testimony in this case. Public testimony is recorded by the court reporter, Harriet, up here. We'll take that down and transcribe it and make it available to the parties in the case. You are expected to tell the truth. In fact, I'm going to swear in the entire room. Anybody who wants to testify will take an oath. Okay, I have the following four people: Steve Merrill, Kathleen Flynn, Kyle Drozdick, and Keen Martins, who asked to testify. Would the four of you stand up and raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
I do.
Thank you all. Have a seat.
So that was all very official. We had to swear to speak the truth. You didn't tell me before.
I know. I wasn't expecting that we were going to be sworn in, but we did. We got sworn in. And, well, there were a couple people before us. And they represented one was a private citizen who had been a Quest customer, and the other was with AARP.
Yeah. Maybe we should just listen to the concerns the gentleman, Mr. Merrill, had from the AARP.
Yes, the American Association of Retired Peoples.
AARP has a strong commitment to ensuring consumers have access to affordable, high-quality telecommunication services, including broadband. AARP would like to raise concerns based on experiences in other states where former Bell operating companies have sold their local telephone service operations to smaller companies. We urge the Commission to ensure that the proposed transaction does not put customers at risk of rate increases and deterioration in service quality. The expansion of affordable broadband to unserved and underserved areas should be required. Residential customers rely on their local service for critical and essential communication services. The potential harm from this deal gone wrong would be devastating.
Okay, I appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this gentleman is worried about the quality of service. I think he's not the only one, actually, because it was a recurring theme. Mrs. Flynn, I believe, went up next.
Yes, and she was very concerned. She had dealt with Quest personally, and she was representing herself as a consumer as opposed to Mr. Merrill, who was representing a nation and statewide organization.
I'm here representing myself. I just found out about this hearing a couple of hours ago, and I thought I'd take this opportunity to speak from a personal consumer point with my experience with Quest Communications. For many years, I've had Quest Internet service and Quest telephone service, and neither has been very satisfactory. Eventually, we would get the issue solved, but the service is poor, and I didn't feel like I was getting what I was paying for. However, my biggest issues with Quest over the years has been with billing. And they've been so severe that I, until recently, had a file that was over 3 inches thick.
So, Kyle, you also are a QS consumer.
Yes, and correct.
I think you could fully relate to what both the gentleman and the woman said about poor service and difficulties. And
yes, and I was able to refer to that personally, and I also brought up some other issues that I think the global community is concerned about as well regarding these big telecommunications companies. And so, yeah, let's listen to a little bit of what I had to say.
I'm here as a public citizen, and I'm also a volunteer at the Museum of Communications, which is a project of the Telephone Pioneers of America. And I'm also a Qwest customer, so I have a Qwest landline as well as ADSL service, and it's 7 megabit for anybody interested. And so with those two services, I pay about $100 a month. The United States, our broadband is profoundly overpriced, and I feel like if we want to compete in today's society, we're gonna have to offer better service to people.
So you complain about the broadband, which is actually the reason that I also was there on behalf of the International Foundation for the Proliferation of Broadband.
Which is a very exciting announcement to be able to bring up what your organization is planning. And so this is a really unique opportunity.
Absolutely. Let's listen to that in a moment. You also brought up, we didn't hear that in the short excerpt we played. You also brought up net neutrality.
Yes.
As well as privacy concerns. And you actually commended Qwest on their privacy policies.
I did. And actually, Qwest has been very good about not divulging private data to the federal government. And with all of the terrorism stuff in 2000 and the Patriot Act, Qwest was the only local provider to not divulge stuff that the government wanted. They basically refused the federal government. So I did commend them a little bit. I just told them that I wanted that to continue.
Yes. You also mentioned net neutrality. Do they have any history regarding that? Do they have plans to make companies pay for the bandwidth that's being used, or?
Not that I'm aware of, but it is an issue that I think that needs vigilant supervision by the public, and we need to make sure that they don't move in a direction that's unhealthy for our country and the global community.
I understand. You're also concerned about, we just had a really animated conversation about it in the car as well, the history of the American phone system. And you also mentioned this at the hearing.
And lastly, I would like to speak regarding my involvement with the Museum of Communications. I'm a volunteer there, and as I said, it's a 501c3 project of the Telephone Pioneers of America. And through my interactions with them, I've grown to really appreciate the history of our telecommunications system, and I would appeal or simply request that as this merger either proceeds or whatever your decision is about it, I would like continued support for the historical element that places like the museum contribute in recording the history and basically preserving the American heritage surrounding the telephone system. I think that's absolutely paramount, that young people understand how things work and the direction that things are going.
Yeah, because you just told me in the car, actually, the telephone system, which was previously all owned by AT&T, I understand, is really all-pervasive in American society. The government is running on it.
Yeah, it's a private company, but it's very, very steeped in historical tradition. At one point, many, 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 many people out of all the jobs in the country were involved mostly with the telephone system, and basically it's a huge deal. The government, as you said, the government works they use a private system from AT&T. It's not been a state-owned company. It's been very independent of the government. So it's very important to me and I think to like our society to know the history and not forget it, no matter what direction it goes in.
All right, so one of the things, it used to be one company. On paper, there is competition now, but you don't really believe that there is actual competition, right?
Well, I mean, if you look at the timeline, it's only been 10, 20 years. And, you know, they did have to split up because for monopolistic reasons, which has happened in the software industry. Various lawsuits have been brought up, and people have, you know, tried to make the argument there. But it actually did happen in 1984. The Bell telephone system was split up into smaller companies, and various legislation came into play as far as competition and access to networks and stuff like that. But in my opinion, the industry has replaced the corporation, and with media consolidation, you're sort of creeping into information services and that kind of thing. You're basically up against an industry instead of a corporation, which to me is no different.
And you even see the content industry moving into the data carrier business, which is really scary. And in Europe, we've seen actually in also in other parts like Asian countries, there's been recent discussions about ACTA, the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. We've been going on about that at length at Signal, but you actually never heard of it, did you?
I absolutely had no idea about this this worldwide initiative that American companies and institutions were putting forth. I had no idea about it.
So yeah, I shall have to educate you on that subject, because it's a really scary thing going on, where basically the content industry is getting into the lawmaking process, and if there's even the hint of copyright infringement, you could be cut off from the internet for good, and that's really a bad thing, because in this day and age, internet is increasingly important, not only to participate in your local community, also to be part of the global community that's forming with the internet. Something related to that is the state of bandwidth in the broadband in the United States. We've seen a bit about that. I expressed my concerns about that in the hearing. Let's listen to that.
I'm from The Hague in the Netherlands in Europe. I'm involved.
You may be our first international witness at a public hearing involving telephone service in Colorado.
So I expected it. I will explain how I got mixed up in this. I'm part of an initiative that's based in The Hague to start an international foundation for the proliferation of broadband. For the past 2 weeks, I've been visiting locations at the West Coast, seeing how the broadband situation actually is. And I found that, well, people pay a lot of money for quite deplorable quality of service. The speeds are very slow. If you compare this with, for example, Europe, where I am from, you pay 20 times as much. It impacts how people can participate in the global economy, the global community that is being formed by the internet. For example, I myself have been trying to communicate with people back home using modern technologies like voice over IP, VoIP. Voice over IP, it's VOIP. It was quite impossible. I'm staying at a consumer, a friend of mine here in Denver, and well, the best internet they could get doesn't even allow me to make a simple call back home using Skype. It's too slow.
I know you said this, but I want to make sure it's clear on the record. What's the organization that you're working with?
It's an initiative restarting this up. It's the International Foundation for Proliferation of Broadband. We're setting it up because we think that broadband is, as I said, crucial to participating in the global community.
So yes, there you have it, the International Foundation for the Proliferation of Broadband. It's a very young organization. There's so far two members in there, I think, but we're rapidly recruiting new people and people to make logos and set up a website and everything. But yeah, this is the thing. We've been visiting places, and everywhere we go, most of the places, there's ADSL, and it's really crappy, actually.
It really is.
I tried to upload some pictures, it takes ages, my connections got reset, and I have to wait and to sit somewhere at the hackerspace that has fiber, and which is really expensive as well, to have speeds that are quite normal at homes in Europe. It's amazing, really, because the internet was invented in the USA. Yes. It's a DARPA, the whole thing. It's an American thing, and yet
it sucks.
It's amazing.
It's terrible.
Know. Yeah.
We should be ashamed.
<It's>, so I hope the IFPB can change that all, and that you will have some decent internet at some point in the near future. Because I have sympathy for the situation. I remember 10, 15 years ago, we had speech like that in the Netherlands, and it was horrible. I almost put that out of my mind. Coming here brings back all those memories. Anyway, the hearing. So this was the public part of the hearing. Right before that, actually was a sort of a negotiation situation where parties concerned with the merger, as well as the parties directly involved with the merger, were present.
Yes,
with their army of lawyers.
Exactly, and yeah. Competitive local exchange carriers were there as well to represent their interests on Quest or CenturyLink's networks, and they basically had to all come together and try to reach a settlement, some sort of agreement in front of the Colorado and Denver Public Utilities Commission. And the interesting thing is that it is a local meeting. It's the concerns of the state, but the reality is Quest is involved and responsible for more than 10 other states on the West Coast, and I spoke a little bit about that. And basically, it's the entire West Coast that's going to be impacted. And it was very funny to me to hear them talk. Well, we've reached a settlement agreement, but we're going to be putting in riders and conditions that make certain that Quest has to invest in Colorado's infrastructure. And to me, that's nothing. That's like, great. Of course, you're only interested in local interests. The company is headquartered here. But what about the other 10 states on the West Coast that have to deal with this company? And they can merge and do all their wonderful things in Denver, but everybody gets nothing.
Yeah, and actually they reached an agreement. I mean, the parties not directly involved that raised opposition to the merger. Apparently, their concerns were met. Let's briefly hear what the chairman told us about that, because the public hearing was after that fact. So, although it's on record, it remains to be seen how much relevance it will have to the decision, I guess.
This, I'm hearing the case, as I mentioned, and what's been happening lately was that some of the parties in the case who previously had opposed the merger, or at least had reasons to oppose the merger, have engaged in settlement agreements. And one of the settlement agreements, which happens to be between the staff of the Public Utilities Commission and the applicants, that's Quest and CenturyLink, that settlement agreement calls for an investment in broadband in Colorado.
So, as you can hear, that's only going to be invested in Colorado. And in my opinion, if this goes sour, if Quest gets worse, this hearing and this merger was an opportunity that was missed.
Definitely, yes. And it's strange. It's a really small company that's merging with this really large company, a local company basically with a very large company. The decision that is going to be made is expected to be mid-December, I understood from the proceedings. I assume you will be watching, and maybe we will have you in our show sometime as an expert from the United States to report on this matter.
With pleasure. I'll be there, absolutely. And I think that it's going to be an interesting thing to watch, and I hope that things get profoundly better, but we will see.
Well, thank you for taking me there and giving me this small glimpse into the democratic process. I enjoyed it.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again.
We are in Osceola, Iowa. We are witnessing a great moment. We have the local McDonald's, and they are raising the new arcs.
Yes, this is a new and improved arc. It looks like they're getting the second arc offloaded from the truck. And very shortly now, any minute, we will be witnessing the raising of the new arches.
We are watching the old arches. They are still up there on a high pole. How do you think they will get them down?
I think they're waiting on some sort of crane. I'm
I'm very new to this. I haven't seen this is my first arch raising, and wow. I'm sure
So even though you lived for almost 30 years in this country, you have never seen an actual arch raising.
I have never ever witnessed an arch raising, and really this is a special moment for me personally as an American. And so I gather they're waiting on the crane, which should be here any minute now. And what we'll be seeing is the removal of the old arch, and the new arches will be in place. They're still doing some last-minute assembly, and we'll have the new arch completely ready.
I think for the safety officer there. God, I'm honored to share your first arch racing. That we can witness this moment together. Meanwhile, while we wait for the second crane to arrive, we're in Iowa. We've had a long trip. We went to Denver after we were at the transistor.
Yes.
That was quite a long drive.
Yes.
Once we got there, we got a nice reception though. I've had the best shower ever since I arrived in the US because it seems all the showers here are made for midgets.
Yes, we have accommodations for midgets, but what happened with that movement towards the midget shower heads is tall people were neglected in the process. And well, it seems that the movement for taller showers has started its way west, but it's really only in Denver where you can get a adult sized shower.
Yes, that was a nice experience. We also went to the local hackerspace there. Of course, we went to the public hearing, which people know all about by now.
Absolutely.
But we also went to a hackerspace there, DenHack.
Yes. It was very cool. They had a lot of really good network gear, and they're doing some fiber optics locally. They've got a microwave uplink, which is pretty sophisticated. And they had a big glass etching tool that was actually paying rent because someone was storing it there. They had bought it. It's $1 million piece of equipment for glass etching. And what happened is someone repaired a simple bolt and got it working again. And
they're waiting. Yeah, a $10
bolt. Yeah, a $10 bolt. And they're waiting to have it moved. And then they're going to be able to have more space in the shop. But they had other things. They had acquired some desks on this like loft area.
Oh yeah,
area.
From this the Geek Squad. That's actually something we don't have in Europe. What's the Geek Squad?
Geek Squad is a division of this big box corporation, Best Buy. They're basically like a Saturn. They sell electronics and appliances, and basically they have a division that's called the Geek Squad. They come, they install, they fix computers, they do these kinds of things for consumers who are buying their big washer or their 62-foot big screen TV or whatever it is. So the Geek Squad had gone out of business in this particular location. They got very large benches, like lab benches for working on projects, and I think they're going to be able to teach some classes and do like group projects, and, you know, assembling things or whatever kinds of interests they get into down the road. But I don't know, what else did you like?
Yeah, it felt really homely. They had a nice lounge there with decorated with Space Invaders.
Yes,
was a nice job. Actually, the girl who did it, she came in later to decorate the door as well.
Yes.
With the DenHack logo.
Yes.
Which turned out really nice as well, I think. Like, it's
like
really creative.
The stencil work with the graffiti. It's awesome. It's really, really cool. Yeah.
I enjoyed Denver, actually. We hung out in the city a bit during the afternoon. It was
yes.
a really relaxed and loungy.
I think the crane's here now.
Oh, wow. Definitely. Yeah. I see some big equipment rolling in.
Yes, alright. Any moment now.
So they're going to have a discussion, I think, on how to best do this.
Yes. Continue, I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. From there, we went from Denver to, Kansas City. Missouri.
Yes.
Missouri.
Yes.
Which was also a really long drive. We've been driving for 10 hours, got a bit grumpy at
the
end.
Yeah, we were a bit stressed. Yeah.
It's just, the Midwest? It's really empty. There's not a lot there. So you have to make these long legs of the trip. Actually, this is one of the last ones. We will have another 10, 11-hour drive somewhere at the end. But from now, it's more like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah. But it's a bit much going straight all the way out to the horizon.
There's nothing.
You can't see anything but straight
it's
road.
It's almost as flat as the Netherlands. And you see the road stretching out. Yeah, it's tiring.
It's really a strain on you. And I mean, it was a nice ride, but just the same thing over and over again. I mean, no wonder people in Denver warned us, you know, just get out of Kansas as soon as you can.
Apparently, the police also understand
this. Yeah, they understand. They encourage some
they tolerate a bit of speeding, like 10, 50 miles
over. A healthy 10 miles over is expected as far as, you know, what we were told with the police. So,
yep.
We made our way out, and then we arrived in Missouri, Kansas City, and there were a couple guys down in this space.
Yep.
It's actually 10 stories underground. And it's
yeah, we took an elevator down, and we ended up in a cave.
It's a cave.
It's not a missile silo.
Someone told us it's a missile silo.
People think it's a missile. It's a cave. It's a former stone mine.
Yeah, and you have to be very careful because there are spaces opening up. You never know. Someone might have a space in a missile silo, so you got to be very specific.
Exactly.
But they had
you got a bit frightened about the missile silo idea, but
yeah,
it wasn't
concerned.
A missile silo, so you wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Well, you still had some concerns about the ceiling coming down, which apparently it does.
Yeah.
Stone by stone.
And I had a feeling, I was like, why would a missile silo be right in the middle of Kansas City? Wouldn't that be sort of a PR thing for the military if they're launching missiles right in...
Well, to be honest, it wouldn't have surprised me. You have
true.
Tested the missiles, the atomic bombs on people in Nevada, so...
That's absolutely right, yeah.
This was a former stone mine, and it was actually a funny day. It's probably a huge space there with pillars of rock. It's cut out of the rock.
Right.
And in between they've made all kinds of warehouses, and there's three areas where there's office units.
Yeah, it's like
So you're in this cave, you walk through a door, and you're in an office. It could be on the 10th floor of a high-rise building in New York, or I don't know, except there's no windows.
Yes, and there's a lot of tenants in this. It's a big office park.
Yes.
And there's warehouses, many businesses, and there's no windows, and apparently ventilation's a problem, but they've got this nice space, and they kind of make do with it. They've got a couple old machines, Apple II, an AT&T terminal.
Working order.
Yeah, and then they had a mill of some sort.
CNC router.
Yeah, but it looked very open source or something like that. They made from a kit. It was very cool.
Mm.
And they also had a small soldering bench in the back,
and
pretty sophisticated systems. Yeah,
they're big in MakerBots as well. Actually, they've been innovating on the MakerBot a bit because extruder is always a problem with these things.
Right.
And they've been modifying the design a bit, and people apparently are using their design now to modify existing extruders to actually work.
Yeah, they've got interesting techniques that they're coming up with, and people are seeking them out to get advice on how to just do it right. And they were doing some interesting things. They're also trying to get cell service down there, because apparently in the cave it's a very bad quality. You can't use your cell phone.
Well, there was no signal. There was no signal. So,
it was a lot of fun to catch up with those guys. And we took a break.
And I had my first traditional American meal, right?
We did.
Yeah,
we took a break. We had a burger. I don't know. What did you think of a burger?
It was a nice burger. Nice fries with it. And it was a bit of an odd restaurant, though. You had to order at one place and pick it up somewhere else. And your name would be pronounced, of course. Would be announced on the speakers, but of course they pronounced my name really. I couldn't hear any of the names. Actually.
I know it was all the same.
There was a Wayne, and we thought it might have been Kyle or Kuhn.
Exactly.
It was confusing. But
it's very bizarre. And then the drink lady. You have to pay your drink separate.
Yeah.
You pay for your food up front, but then the drink lady will serve you, but you have to leave her money for just your drinks.
That was. And they had some pinball games as well. I'm sorry, I wasted my quarters on them. They were really badly maintained.
Were they?
Was a shame. Yeah,
oh, I'm sorry.
One was even the slope was off, so the balls would just lay there and not roll down. No, it was horrible. It was. But well, okay. So that's great American tradition that I participated in the eating of the burger.
A real burger.
We are at the burger restaurant at the moment, McDonald's.
Correct.
The arches are. Do I see some movement there?
I think they're gathering. It
I
looks
don't
like
know.
They're, yeah. It looks like they're still in the planning stages on that second arch.
I think this might. I don't blame them. They have to be careful. This is delicate business.
Yes.
These are golden arches. You can't just. So I think we are going to miss the occasion because the show is coming to an end. We just had an hour.
Yeah.
It's hard to mention everything we see and share our experiences. I try to blog about it on my site, wordpress.metro.cx. So go over there. Also, Kyle is taking a lot of pictures of a trip.
Yes.
I think you will be working on a book at some point.
Yes.
People interested in that, they should go to sodapopfilm.com and watch the site. And
yeah. I'll be updating, and I think that's it for us. Yeah,
I think we're signing out for this week. Next week there will be a special because Fish will be joining us from Japan.
Correct.
He's doing a trip there of the hackerspaces in Japan.
Very much like what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very cool. Very, very cool.
It's a bit shorter. I think they're gone for 1 or 2 weeks. There's a lot of American hackers there as well because it's one of the Nick Farr Enterprises things.
Okay. All right.
But I think we'll have some fun. You won't be there, unfortunately. You have some business to attend to.
That's right. But I'll be back. I'll rejoin you in Boston.
And that will be fun. So thanks for listening, everyone. And until next week.
Good night.